Last night, I texted my buddy and said, dude, we're going to the movies. And we went to the movies on a Thursday night at midnight. And it was totally the wrong thing to do. I got the kids going to school the next day. I had a 9 o'clock meeting on the phone with London. But man, I had a good time at the movies last night. I was out till 3 a.m. on a weeknight. I felt like a kid. And I feel better. I feel better having done it. I'm exhausted. I'm the walking dead right now. I can't even think. I'm so tired. I had a good time at the movies yesterday. That's what I do to play. What do you do?
Racing to me feels like nothing else, really. There's nothing that I've found that's been able to clear my mind in the same way as racing.
What are you doing right now? It's 5 o'clock. Go home. Go outside. Get on a surfboard. Build some Legos. Race a car. Build a robot. Go to the movies on a Thursday night at midnight. Play.
Being able to show my son, for example, that, hey, I made this robot, right? He loves that. And it's fun for me to be able to see him go, wow, Papa, you made this, right? And it's something that he can hold in his hand and he understands. If I show him a computer program, he's not going to get that. If I show him a picture of me jumping out of an airplane, I don't think he's going to quite figure out what the heck is going on there either.
This Developer's Life is brought to you by CodeBrush for Visual Studio. We appreciate their support. With Consume First Declaration, powerful templates, smart selection tools, intelligent code analysis, innovative navigation, and an unrivaled collection of visual refactorings all working together, your development productivity will increase dramatically. Get CodeBrush. We'll be glad you did. Check them out at devexpress.com/CodeBrush.
Sharpening the saw, work-life balance, whatever you want to call it, you have to do something when you're not working. David Heinemeier Hansen, or DHH as he's known, he likes to race cars.
Being in the zone, programming, can have that same sort of effect, where you're so deeply focused on this one problem that everything else fades away. You're not worried about what you're going to have for dinner or where you're going to be next week or a meeting coming up or anything else, really. This sensation of just complete and total focus is just utterly addicting. And in a race car, it's easier to get that. Programming, it's kind of hard. You can get it occasionally when you're just terribly inspired by something and you just everything lines up just perfectly. But it doesn't happen necessarily. It certainly doesn't happen every day. I'm not in the zone every day programming, but I am in the zone every single time I go behind the wheel of a fast race car, because if you're not, you're going to end up in a wall. There's sort of a sense of criticality and urgency to your inputs that simply necessitate that you get in the zone. So if you're addicted to being in that state of mind, then it's just a natural extension that if you get into racing, that you'll become addicted very quickly.
If you run a computer long enough, it accumulates what's known as bit rot, just naturally slows down. So you need to repave it every 6 months, every year. Same thing with your brain. Although we can't repave our brains, so we choose hobbies, ones that make us focus, force us to focus.
I think for me, racing is probably the pinnacle of that. There are other things you can do or activities you can have that have aspects of that. When I'm doing other kinds of sport, I can feel like I'm really focused and in the zone. I just playing tennis or golf or even rollerblading, at times you can feel like you're tasting that zone. But what I really like about racing is that it keeps you in it for long periods of time. When you're in a racing car and in a race, you'll sometimes be in a car for upwards of 2 hours. And it's really just fascinating that your mind can stay so single-tracked, so focused for such a long period of time. Usually, most people who've been in the zone will sort of recognize it in bursts. As I said earlier, programming can sometimes have this magic. I've certainly been in the zone with programming where you look up and all of a sudden 3 hours have passed and you're like, how did that happen? That's evidence that you've been in the zone and you've just come up for air and you're sort of ecstatic from that and you lost all track of time and space. But it's sort of like it just happens occasionally. You don't necessarily know when it's going to happen and it's hard to consciously induce it. It's much easier to just get in a race car, shut the door, turn the ignition on and go. And if you know that that's going to give you that same level of reward, that's just a very appealing activity.
You know, when I'm at home on the weekends, maybe I'm riding my bike or maybe I'm doing a crossword puzzle, I can stop what I'm doing. I can take a break. I can just think about other things, but not when you're racing. You're committed. You're committed for a long time. It makes me think for some reason of taking off in an airplane where you sort of just grip the seats and you think, well, here I go.
Absolutely. One of the key things that I enjoy more than anything else is the notion of putting yourself in a situation where you're slightly underqualified, where you have to learn, progress, and become better to simply get your head above water. When I first got involved with Ruby and making Rails and even creating Basecamp, it was certainly that kind of moment for me. I dropped in at the deep end, not really knowing whether I would sink or swim. And with racing, I get that same sensation. I've dropped myself in racing situations where I've been fairly uncomfortable with the whole setup. Either I'm at a new track I don't know before, I'm in a new car, I'm with a new team, I'm going much faster than I was before. There's all these variables that constantly sort of move up the bar, make it harder for you and force you to, on the spot, just simply get better. And that's part of that addiction. I have an addiction to improvement. Which I find is just sort of when you can find an outlet for that, when you can find an interest, a hobby or a vocation that allows you to continuously get better at what it is that you do, then that's where you want to stick. Because if you get into that groove and the activity is sort of self-reinforcing and you're constantly getting better, then I mean, you better stay on it, because that's going to lead to good places usually.
You know, I could imagine for some people the goal for racing would be to qualify, let's say, in the top three or four, so you could move on to, say, a bigger race, maybe race a faster car. Or other people might think, well, I need to shave another hundredth of a second off, or I want to perfect what I'm doing here, and then I'll be ready to move on. So what do you think? Which one is more motivating for you?
I think I like both facets of it. I like the big jumps where you're trying something completely new and unfamiliar. But in many ways, I think I actually like the sort of measured progress even better. I like getting really, really good at something. And the only way to get really, really good at something is to do it lots and lots of times. And in some ways, sort of sticking with it. So you put yourself in slightly different situations, or you just give yourself slightly bigger goals. In a race car, the goals are often measured in tenths of a second. Like I'll be 7/10 of a second off the pole of a certain race. So that's a very clearly defined goal, which I think in itself has quite a large appeal. A lot of the things that we do work-wise does not have that clearly defined goals. certainly not to the level of shave 7/10 off your racing time and you will win the race. Like, it's not going to be like learn Ruby 15% better and you will get this monster promotion, or get just a little bit better at marketing and your company will dominate and will be worth $100 million. Like, challenges usually don't present themselves that square in real life. So in some ways, it's kind of like, it's more like a video game, actually. Video games generally have more clearly defined areas and aspects of sort of success or failure. And I think that we all crave that. We all crave that feedback that comes from just knowing whether something worked or didn't work. I think the sort of the fuzziness that is much of real life is an intense source of anxiety and discomfort and frustration. I really believe that staying active physically is a huge benefit for your mental capacity. And I feel like I'm better behind the keyboard when I come back from being behind the wheel, or I come back from doing other sorts of physical activities. I think there's, or I don't even think, there's plenty of academic evidence to point to for sort of that link between mind and body. But the funny thing actually with racing is that, yes, it is physical, and pulling 2.5 Gs in a corner for 2 hours straight is straining, and your body will be tired and exhausted afterwards. The sort of the hard part is mental. There's nothing physically in terms of, well, that's not entirely true, but the large difference between me and somebody who does this for a living, races cars for a living, is not in our sort of physical makeup. It is in the mental capacity of the driver. How consistent can you be, and how in the zone, how focused for long periods of times can you be? And I think that that's the kind of training that I get out of it as well. Just being conditioned to have the capability to just stay focused for long, long periods of time. I think the modern work environment in front of a computer teaches the opposite. We are constantly distracted. We're constantly have our focus disrupted, and we're left with these tiny fragments of time to dive deep and get better at something. And I think that it's very easy to become accustomed to that. And once you become accustomed to only having 15 minutes or half an hour to get anything done, I think you'll also just become accustomed to the terrible productivity you'll get out of that. So if you have other activities in your life that remind you how wonderful it can be to have 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours dedicated to just one activity with nothing else pulling on you or your time, then I think you'll be impatient for getting that in your work life too. And as a result of that, you'll be so much more productive.
See how someone could graduate from being a casual Scrabble player to all of a sudden entering into competitions. I can see how perhaps a weekend brewer might get really good at it and open up a microbrewery. But when it comes to racing a car, you have to actually go to a track and decide, I'm going to get into that race car and I'm going to race it. It doesn't seem like you just go from like driving your kids to school to then racing cars. So how did you get started in this?
A friend of mine had done this a prior season. He had raced in something called Formula Masters, which is this 20-year-old design, which looks like a miniature Formula One car. Like it's called an open wheel car, so the wheel wells aren't covered, and it's just terribly old race car, which is the function of being old, tried and true, means that it's also cheap, which is a good thing when it comes to racing, because these things sort of have a tendency to become expensive. So he was doing this, and he asked me whether I wanted to come down to the track and maybe give it a try. And up until that point, I'd never been in a race car. The only exposure to racing had been Xbox and PlayStation. But I was certainly interested. So I got down to the track, I jumped in the car, and in the first day, I think I spent maybe 3 hours behind the wheel. I kind of partially damaged the gearbox. I tore off one of the front winglets on the car, and generally just had an absolutely amazing time. So after that, I kind of said, like, wow, this is something I want to try some more. So thankfully, there was this this series, this racing series that he was in. I did my first race just, I think, maybe a couple of weeks later, finished last. Then I did another 5 races in that series that same year. And at the end of the last race, I was battling for the lead.
Wow. Yeah, it must be interesting to think about that versus the very first time you raced a car. I mean, I can only imagine like walking up to a race car for the very first time and getting in it. I mean, I've never done that, but I mean, it must be an interesting sensation to turn the key and hear the engine kick up, feel it rumble and think, oh man, I am in a car that is going to go faster than any car I've ever driven. That must have been an amazing sensation.
That's the sort of the wonderful part, I think, about the racing aspect, that as soon as you get down behind the wheel, at least for me, it's very relaxing. It's not a moment of sort of incredible intensity, especially in that part, since there was no expectations for me to do anything. This was my first race. Nobody were expecting that I was going to do anything but finish last, which meant that there was no pressure. So I got in behind the wheel, and then of course I think this is right. The very first corner, I actually went off because there was just so much new information coming at me from the other drivers that were around me that I, of course, completely forgot where I was supposed to brake. And then I broke way too late, spun the car off, and ended up in the grass. And that was sort of that same idea we were talking about earlier, where you throw yourself into a new situation. And what's often special about that new situation is that there's just more information available. When you're just driving around the track by yourself, you worry about where the apex is and the track out and all these technical aspects of how can you go around the track as fast as possible. Now, throw in 6 other drivers right around you, and all of a sudden you have all sorts of other concerns, like, oh, the guy in front of me is in the spot where I want to be. Now I have to divert from my regular line and try something else. So that was just absolutely intoxicating to get all this new information thrown at you and all this new stimuli. And I quickly got back on track and finished up the race. But of course, after that, as soon as it had wrapped, I was ever so eager to go out again. What I like so much about just the aspect of driving itself is the idea of the limit. So in racing, you call the limit is where the tires are going to give up their hold on the asphalt and let go. So to find where that limit is, you have to overstep it. You have to go beyond the limit to know where the limit is and then be able to ride it just so exactly. And I think that that is true for life in general. I find that anything that I do in my personal life or professionally, I want to know where the limit is. I want to find exactly how far can we take something, because that's the only way I'll find out whether we're at maximum efficiency, at maximum capacity of what we can do or what I can do. And I just accept that the only way to get to that point is by stepping over the limit. And if you just accept that, if you accept that there'll be minor missteps and mishaps and maybe a few accidents in the process from stepping over the limit, you gain the freedom to do so at will. I think the key thing holding a lot of people back from racing or other pursuits is just this innate fear of the limit. Oh, what will happen if I step over the limit? Will I get fired, or will I crash into a wall, or will I do all these other things? And if you are in that spot, you're held back by fear. And maybe, I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of evolutionary good sense to that, that you shouldn't step over the limit too many times. It means you're going to get eaten by a tiger. But the worst that's going to happen in most circumstances is that you're either going to make a little bit of a fool of yourself, or you're going to bend a rim. And at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter. It matters far more that you sort of develop to the peak of your abilities. I think I'm addicted to improvement in itself. I'm addicted to just becoming the best at whatever it is that I try to do, for my own satisfaction. That is the fun. The fun is improving. So I really like aspects and things where it's just very clear and visible when you're getting better. And as we talked about in racing, it's you can look at the clock. Did you get any faster? In programming, you can also get that aspect somewhat. Is your code getting more beautiful? Is it getting shorter? Is it doing more? Are you writing it faster? But the feedback loop is a little more fuzzy and indirect. But nonetheless, for me, it's the same principle. I enjoy just becoming a better programmer. I enjoy becoming a better race car driver. I enjoy becoming just a better manager, to take something that's even more fuzzy.
Do you think that maybe the fear of flying into a wall might add some spice to this hobby? So put another way, would you say that maybe you're a bit of a fear junkie, that the only way to get you to focus and improve is to scare you, for lack of better words?
I'm not a fear junkie at all. I don't respond well to frightening situations. To me, driving a race car, there's no fear in that. That's not the appeal. I don't watch horror movies. I don't like the sensation of being frightened. I know that lots of people do. I mean, obviously, there's plenty of industries catering to that. But I actually try to avoid it, which is in many ways the same way. I try to avoid risk too. So neither fear nor risk is something that that appeals intensely to me. I try to find out a way where I can just avoid that. If something is perceived to be scary, can I learn more? Can I know more to realize that it's actually not very scary at all? So, for example, for racing, racing actually used to be something you should be afraid of. If you were a race car driver in the 1950s, the chances of you actually dying were immense. Lots of race car drivers died during that era. You really, truly had something to fear. Modern day racing is not that at all. Like, there are very few fatalities or even serious injuries in racing these days. Anybody who's watched a Formula One car go straight into the wall, basically explode, and the driver just walk out will know that the cars and the techniques of today are just incredibly safe. So just learning about that, learning about odds, to me, I try to approach it in a very rational manner. If the odds of getting killed in a race car are X, there are probably a whole lot of other things that are more dangerous to do than drive a race car. I haven't looked this up, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's more dangerous to commute to work in a car every day for a year than it is to drive a race car in a racetrack for 10 times a year. I'd probably guess that it would be more dangerous to commute. So things like that, just knowledge, helps me combat or sidestep any fears that I might have.
If you spend any time with a psychologist, they'll sit you down, they'll probe your brain, and they'll try and pull out every single fear that motivates you to do weird things. And then systematically, they'll get you to try and face those fears and deal with them? What if that was your hobby? Every single weekend you go out and you face your fear. Maybe it's jumping out of a plane, hurtling towards the earth, only to pull a parachute just at the last moment. Or strapping tanks to your back, going 100 feet underwater. David likes to pull G's, keeping himself away from that wall that can crush his car, and even him.
I absolutely agree that the fear itself is one of the key inhibitors of people, that prevents them from achieving everything that they could achieve. Just acknowledging that you're afraid of something gives you a chance to shine light on it and examine whether it's actually a rational fear. I believe that the vast majority of all fears in the world are irrational. If you start examining the things that you are afraid of, you will actually find that that they're not worth being afraid of. And that all the time and energy that you put into fear can be unleashed, and you can use all that time and energy for something else much more worthwhile to pursue. And I think the first thing to recognize is just that yes, there is risk. There's risk in almost everything. There's a chance that you will fail. But if you take that one step further and not just, oh, I fear that what will happen if I fail? Yes, exactly. Go down that route and figure out what exactly would happen if I fail. You should only fear one thing, which is regret. Fear the regret of not doing things. That's what I fear more than anything.
When listening to David talk about driving a race car, I can identify a little bit, because one of the things I love to do is to surf. We've talked about that. And it's a commitment. You get out there and big surf, you have to know what you're doing or you could die. And yeah, the world melts away. But on the flip side, you know, we talked to a guy like Pete, who we're going to talk to next. I mean, he doesn't need the adrenaline rush. In fact, didn't he say something?
You're right. He did. He actually said something like, well, here it is.
My thrill doesn't come from adrenaline rush, like skydiving, you know, fast cars, stuff like that. Yeah, I get a kick out of that. I'll enjoy a roller coaster at the amusement park, but I don't get the thrill of being close to death. Like that's not a turn on for me.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't need to feel like he's going to die in order to be reminded that he's alive.
I'm just so curious about the way people play. I mean, I have a couple of hobbies. I also like to brew beer, and you get to flex a lot of your engineering muscle and all the tools you have. You basically have to make for yourself or either buy them. They're pretty expensive. What do you do? I'm looking over your shoulder here, and I can see, what is that, a bridge? Something?
It's the Lego Tower Bridge, 4,283. Seven pieces or something like that.
So you really do play with Legos, because I mean your whole Lego thing you have on your blog, it's a real deal. You play with Legos.
I enjoy. I mean, I'm not like, there's a thing called adult fans of Lego, but yeah, I mean, it's not like cosplay or anything. Don't look at me like that. I don't know, it's not like I'm in the Society for Creative Anachronism, but yeah, I'm. Okay. Some people go out and they recreate. I don't know. Orc battles or whatever, the battle for Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. Other people make Legos. Yeah, it's the thing that I would do if I had nothing to do.
Yeah, it's like those guys, they call it LARPing, live action role playing. What's the other one? The Civil War battles.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I bought a tutorial for Final Cut, and the whole tutorial was about a guy who did a documentary about these Civil War reenactments. And I was more focused on the weirdos that did that than it was the tutorial that I bought.
But, you know, and the thing is, though, those guys are renting cars at Enterprise, or they're, you know, would you like fries with that? And that's the thing that they do to play. And, you know, when we're sitting here working on the computer, it's interesting that the thing that you and I picked to do is not being on our computer.
Right. Instead, I'm staring at you and talking into this microphone here, and we do this. And I guess it's fun. You having fun? I'm having fun.
It's not stressful. No. It doesn't take away. It's about draining the tank and then refilling the tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know how I'm notorious for leaving conferences early, and everyone's like, "Why? You know, there's a party later." It's like, I don't want to go to a party. My kids are waiting at home. Mm-hmm. That refills the tank. Mm-hmm. Staying at a party in Vegas after a conference is not my thing. But I have friends that go to these conferences. They do their talk, and then they go and they party until they're blitzed. And that's a totally different thing. You know what I mean?
So speaking of friends, you talked to Pete Brown about this very thing. And see, when we talked about this show, I was thinking, oh, I know a guy who has an amazing hobby. He's a race car driver. It's DHH. And
that was the first thing out of your mouth. It was like, a show on hobbies and play? This guy's a race car driver. And I said, oh, a show on hobbies and play? This guy's building a CNC machine in his living room.
I don't even know what that is.
And neither do I. I asked him.
CNC is computer numeric control, and it comes from way back before you had computers attached, or separate PCs attached to these machines to direct the movement. They had to kind of built-in numeric controllers that said which way the milling head needs to move and what patterns it needs to follow to cut the different shapes out of the material that's loaded in there. In the case of modern CNC machines, which still have the same name, what they do is they read something called NC code, so just the NC part of computer numeric control. That NC code describes, say, the X-axis needs to move this many steps to the left. The Z-axis, which has the tool cutter in it typically, needs to move up this many steps. And then, the other axis, the Y-axis, needs to move out a little bit. And it does all of these things very rapidly, and you end up getting this fluid motion on the machine that can be used to cut out a shape. I have a Sherline mill that I go and I design stuff in CAD software on my PC, and then I have it run through and create special tool paths, and then it'll mill out that shape out of whatever material I put on the mill, right? So I could also do 2D things and have it cut out shapes in wood or aluminum or stuff like that. For example, like robot bodies is one of the things I want to have it cut out so I can do some more stuff with robots.
And see, and this is one more reason that I appreciate Pete. Here's a guy who won't change his own oil on the car, but might build a robot to fetch him beer. I mean, that is brilliant. And that's totally awesome, right? I don't want to mow my own lawn, but I'll build a robot to mow my lawn.
Like, I often get the, wow, somebody has too much time on their hands type comments, and those always drive me nuts because it's a bit about how you spend your time. Like, I don't watch a whole lot of TV, but I spend a lot of my evenings, instead of sleeping when I should be sleeping, I'm working on, electronics projects and doing some stuff with building out analog synthesizers and trying to figure out how to build a new CNC machine for the other room so I can go and mill front panels for a rack mount synthesizer I was thinking about building and messing around with MIDI and learning how to solder better and a bunch of other stuff. So those all take a ton of time, but it's time that's taking away from other kind of time sink activities that I could normally be doing.
Where is your wife during this time?
So she goes to sleep at usually somewhat normal hours. So sometimes we'll watch, a TV show. We have a kind of a standing TV date on Thursdays for a show that we watch all the time and stuff. But a lot of times she'll do her evening chores that she has to do, and then she does more reading than I've been doing lately. I do most of my reading on the plane and on trips and whatnot, but she'll usually do a fair bit of reading in the evenings, right? Of course, this isn't every night, but it is a fair percentage of the week.
One of the things that, from my perspective, stands out about your hobbies is that a lot of people have a hobby that's software. So they'll do software all day that is like soul-sucking and they hate themselves. And then they'll go and they'll do fun software that makes them hate themselves less. So they, write banking software all day and then undo it by writing something fun all night. But literally almost every single one of your hobbies is physical, handheld, touching something, moving something, building something. You could say it's software, but it's not. It's hardware. It is. Everything you do is hardware, from your bench seats to your kitchen renovation.
Yeah, I have two kind of strange motivations. Like, one is I feel like this need to have to make things and make things that are physical that I can touch and that I can use. Like, You know, I do write software all the time, and I think I do some pretty interesting programs and stuff there, but they're not things that I can take out of the computer and use. I mean, the closest you get is, you know, you write an application for the phone or something and have it in your pocket. But that's not the same as building an object or, you know, sitting on a bench seat that I built upstairs in the Windows, right? The other thing that that I learned about myself a long time ago is I have this really odd fascination with manufacturing. Like, you know, I don't want to be a line worker in a factory somewhere, but I want to have kind of like a mini factory, or at least the capability of manufacturing things myself. So I'm drawn to CNC for, you know, milling out panels and doing interesting things like that. I'm drawn to electronics, actually being able to build units. I'm drawn to 3D printing, you know, and I've done a lot with like resin casting and stuff in the past, and I'm trying to learn how to do more with injection molding. And for some reason, I'm really, really drawn with the idea of having a factory in the corner of my house.
You build all these things, and then where do they go?
So I've been trying to... A lot of the stuff that I've had in the past has, in fact, gone into a bin somewhere, which is a really horrible habit that I've been trying to break, because I don't like building disposable things and just sort of, you know, getting this giant pile of garbage in the back of my office. You know, it's not really garbage. It's expensive garbage, but it's not stuff that I'm really using anymore. So I've got that orange robot that one of the motors actually broke on it, and I set it aside and I cannibalized it for parts, but the body is still sitting there somewhere for a rainy day to be used. But what I've been trying to do is to consolidate a little better so that the things that I make are actually useful long term. So one of the things that I built, and it's mostly complete, is a MIDI through box, because I like to mess around with synthesizers. Hey, I've got this part in my head. I have this vision of something I want to make, and that's physical, and it's something in the real world, and I need an extension of myself. I need an extension of my thought process that can reach out and carve stuff out of metal.
I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
It's being able to take this idea from your head, throwing it into the computer, but not having it end just at bits and bytes, having it end on a bunch of hot metal shavings on your shop room floor. Between those and 3D printing and so and a few other parts, we're not too far away from being able to say, you know, anything that you want, you could just make. And make easily.
I am adding and subtracting. I'm controlling and composing. I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
I don't get the thrill of being close to death. Like, that's not a turn-on for me. The closest I get to that is, ooh, I might lose a finger in this table saw, and that's danger enough. So maybe that's kind of a wimpy thing, but I think I'd rather see kind of the powers used to make something as opposed to just scare the crap out of me, right? And I think for that, you know, being able to make something like that, being able to show my son, for example, that, hey, I made this robot, right? He loves that, and it's fun for me to be able to see him go, wow, Papa, you made this, right? And it's something that he can hold in his hand and he understands. If I show him a computer program, he's not going to get that. If I show him a picture of me jumping out of an airplane, I don't think he's going to quite figure out what the heck is going on there either. I have heard theories that guys, and who knows how much truth is in this, right? But I've heard theories that guys go this route and have to build and make things a lot of times to compensate for the whole idea that guys can't create life. But I don't know. I don't know if that one's been proven or not, but it's an interesting theory. I don't want to change my own oil. I don't want to build things for my car. I don't, you know, all those maintenance type things are absolutely no interest to me. But and my wife will tell you, I don't like to fix things around the house. And I despise plumbing like you would not believe. It's the bane of my existence. But if you ask me to build something, like build a bookcase or something like that, something that I can kind of leave my mark on the house, and whoever buys the house after us will have to decide whether or not they're going to keep that bookcase that I built or rip it out and replace it with some crap from IKEA, That's like, that gets me. That's a different kind of thrill. And that's worth it. Somebody wins the lottery and then they say, oh, I'm going to go back to work at my convenience store job or whatever. I simply can't grok why anybody would do that. If I won the lottery, I absolutely have enough things that I could fill every hour of my day and have more time for my family and do a lot of the fun stuff that I want to do. And it wouldn't be work. It would still be fun, right? There are some practical reasons why I don't do this for, you know, for work. I couldn't make enough money working, you know, woodworking or anything like that to make it worth it. I think a lot of those folks that build like high-end custom furniture, unless you get into like the really nice art type stuff, those guys are generally not rich. You know, they're doing some amazing stuff with very lovingly crafted furniture, but you know, they're living, you know, fairly low on the income pole. And I have some practical concerns there, right? Otherwise, I don't know. If it became work, would I still like doing it? I don't know. I'd have to try it out and see. I guess, you know, I programmed for fun before I took that as a job, and now I program less for fun now. So maybe that is really the differentiator. Start paying for it and start having somebody else direct it. It's not interesting anymore.
By pressing down a special key and place a little melody. By pressing down a special key and place a little melody.
So I'm looking around my monitor here, and I've got Task Manager here. I'm copying files there. I've got some code here. I've got a to-do list for work here. I've got some JavaScript that I want to do, and I've got 3 finished blog posts, but we're not working. What are we doing?
No, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Didn't we talk about, I mean, every time we record a show, I'm constantly telling you to stop clicking the mouse, stop looking, would you just please go and turn that down? And yet here you are. I didn't even know you were doing all those other things.
No, but it's interesting because how someone sorts their work, right? If you separate work from play and then just sort things in order of what you want to do versus what you have to do, that's another good way to find out what play is. Like, what's play for you? I used to think I really liked Xbox. But I've actually have 3 different Xbox games that are open right now that have been sitting on my desk, including Batman, which is apparently a very good game, that I have not touched in a month. So either I am poor time manager, or I'm learning that that doesn't refuel me as much as other things do. I'm spending more time reading and putting Lego together than I am doing Xbox, so I might as well just stop pretending that I like Xbox. I mean, I want to play Batman, but I think about if I spend 11 hours playing Batman to completion, that gets me what? I'd much rather create something. I mean, think about the number of podcasts we could make and the amount of time it would take to finish Batman. Because when I'm playing something like Batman, I eventually realize that I'm not really playing Batman. I'm playing the guy that wrote Batman. And I don't want to hang out with that guy. Again, whatever feeds your spirit, right? I know people who would like nothing better than to sit and read for 16 hours every weekend. But if that's what it takes to get you up on Monday morning, then, man, read on, reader.
Is it about time to turn on Lady Gaga? I know. Here's how we're going to end today. I'm going to go get my guitar. You just hold on a second. Here I go.
Oh, God. Here he goes.
I'm going to play the guitar. It's what it is.
And again, a big thank you to the folks at Code Rush for Visual Studio for helping support this developer's life. Code Rush has the fastest rename, the fastest find all references, fastest test runner. When it comes to creating, modifying, and refactoring code, nothing's faster than Code Rush. It's been on my ultimate power tools list since forever. Get Code Rush. You'll be glad you did. Check them out at devexpress.com/CodeRush. We appreciate their support. Sorry, I cannot hear you. I'm kind of busy. It's my favorite song they're gonna play.
with a drink in my head. Hey, you should have made some plans with me. You knew that I was great, and now you won't stop calling me. I'm kind of fancy.
Don't faster, put my coat on faster, leave my front lobe.